Hello, everybody. I guess I just want to start by echoing what Rachel said, it seems like days ago, when she thanked Kiasma and Makolani, and just the, you know, just the kind of spaces that exist like this. It does feel like it's a part of a very interesting set of conversations. It seems like two great projects come together. It's just been such a hospitable and gracious time that we've had here, and I just think that's not incidental to the kind of space that they are, that they run. And I guess I also just really want to thank the translators for sort of doing what they're doing. It seems very labor intensive. So what I'm presenting is a part of a larger project called Black Atlantis, which looks at the Black Atlantic and its afterlives in contemporary illegalized migration at sea, in oceanic environments, through Afrofuturistic dance floors and sound systems, and in outer space. And it attempts to combine two discourses, Afrofuturism and the Anthropocene. And it sort of follows a contention by the geographer Phil Sternberg that says discourses of the Atlantic, of Black Atlantic, sort of focuses on the surface of the water rather than the depths. And therefore, the wetness of the ocean is lost, and therefore, its haptic, tactile quality is lost. So, actually, this is the fifth chapter of this project. I did a piece, actually it's been an excruciating and exciting morning because I have a piece on hydrothermal vents, I have another piece on the plantationist scene, I have a piece on Drexia, so I almost changed my idea of what I'm going to present several times, but I'm just going to stick with what I decided to do. This is, like Olivier said, this is a new work, so I will begin.
One, Moko Junge is a stilt walker, a giant who towers into the sky. With his great height, he walked across the Atlantic from Africa to the Caribbean. He is from both coasts of the Atlantic. As Moko, he is a West African god who towers into the sky, looking over the village and protecting it from harm. As Junge, he is a protective and unpredictable spirit, a ghost from the Caribbean. He is a spirit god of two worlds whose power arises in the crossing of the Atlantic with the enslaved men and women transported in slave ships from West Africa to the Caribbean. He is the spirit god who crossed the sea. He walks the street of Trinidad Carnival, brightly colored. He has crossed the ocean and he is both god and ghost, with whose power he walked across the ocean of death and displacement into the new world.
On April 29, 2006, a 20-foot boat was spotted off the southeastern coast of Barbados. On board, 11 bodies were found by the coast guards, preserved and desiccated by the sun and salt water. The ghost ship was adrift for 4 months on the Atlantic Ocean. It set sail on Christmas Day in Praia in the Cape Verde Islands, full of migrants from Senegal, Guinea-Bissau, and Gambia, en route to the Canary Islands. Each of these people paid £890 for their place on the boat. The boat ran into trouble at Nouadhibou, a Mauritanian port, and was towed for a time by another ship. An article in The Guardian conjectures that the line was severed, possibly by being hacked with a machete. Once adrift, the ship began its slow movement across the Atlantic, buffeted by the winds and the rain, and pulled westward by the ocean's currents. By January, all the passengers had died, with many of their bodies either jettisoned into the sea or washed overboard. The ghost ship then traveled the 2,800 miles to Barbados. A note written by one of the men who died on board and a ticket for the Senegalese Airlines flight found on the boat provided the first pieces of the puzzle. The note read, "I would like to send to my family in Basada a sum of money. Please excuse me and goodbye. This is the end of my life in the Bay of Morocco and Sea. I am from Senegal, but I have been living in Cape Verde for a year. Things are bad. I do not think I will come out of this alive. I need whoever finds me to send this money to my family. Please telephone my friend Ibrahima Duane. Signed, Diao Sumpar Diani."
For the Dogons of West Africa, the 8 ancestors are called Nomo. The scapegoated ancestor, the fish Nomo Anagono, was sacrificed to counteract the disorder of the universe, of which continual land reclamation operations constitute only a terrestrial instance. Could language really be the earth screaming? The bifurcation of Po, the cosmic egg, triggers the onset of turbulence, the cosmic rewind. Unlike astrophysicist Stephen Hawking, who disregards significant matter near to the Big Bang, the Dogons posit the abyssal waters. CCRU, Black Atlantis.
The bodies of these men were found on board an unmarked yacht with no flag. The ship was of French design, 20 feet long, white, and motorized. It was recently repaired. After being discovered in April by a local fisherman, the HMBS Trident was sent to investigate further. The 11 men died of starvation and dehydration. It is thought that when the ship left harbor in Cape Verde, there were 50 men on board. Together, they paid a Spanish man, a mechanic based in the Canary Islands, 50,000 euros for the journey. The men thought that the mechanic was going to sail the boat. At the last minute, however, the Spaniard disappeared, and a Senegalese man took on the role of the skipper. Many men refused to board. According to the El País newspaper, one man jumped off after it had already set sail and swam back to shore. 135 days later, the boat was spotted about 70 nautical miles from Ragged Point, one of the easternmost coasts of Barbados. It was towed to the port at Willoughby Fort in Bridgetown. The bodies of these men were found huddled in two piles in the cabin. They were dressed in colorful clothes, shorts, and jerseys. And when they died on the Atlantic, they had died slowly and very painfully. Their bodies were petrified by the sun, salt water, and sea winds of the Atlantic. When the boat arrived at Willoughby Port, they were hauled to shore, wrapped in plastic bags, and taken to the morgue. Authority traced phone calls made on board, like the one made by Bubo Sissi from Gambia to his cousin Abdou Karim in Portugal. Other relatives in Senegal and Spain received calls from the men before they boarded and during the early part of their voyage. Some of the men have been identified, and some parts of the story of their journey on have come to light.
Three. Lusca is a sea monster, a giant shark octopus from the island of Andros in the Bahamas. It lives in blue holes. If divers swim too close or if fishing boats pass by, they are pulled into the holes to their death. Unwary people standing on the coast can be pulled underwater and perish.
Eleven men died of dehydration on this unnamed boat. The bodies of Diao Sunka Diame, Bouba Sissi, and others were preserved and desiccated by the Moroccan sea that engulfed them. The salt from the water, the sea-laden breeze, and the sun surrounded and then permeated their bodies. The salt, the water, and the sun both destroyed and preserved the bodies of these 11 men huddled together in the cabin. But they are a small fraction of the 40-odd men they set off with who died and were washed overboard into the sea. Through this loss, these bodies become something else. The forces of the sea, its salt water, wind, and sun, corrugate and embalm them. They make the bodies a part of the ravages of the sea and connect them to the others not seen that fell into the ocean. The sea as a force fossilizes the bodies of these men who died on board, destroying and preserving them. The force of the sea winds and weather is insidious and complicit in the transformation of these dead men into fossils of the sea. They have become a part of the archive of the sea, understandable in part only through the sea. The boat without a name or flag came to be known as a ghost ship, and even a coffin ship in the news. The ship rusted and aged with a history that has been obscured by its lack of designation, came into a new life with its complicity in the lives and deaths of these 11 men. Like the slave ships whose roots and ocean currents it followed, its cargo gives it its name. A ship whose life is conferred by death. A death ship, a coffin ship. The death of these men drifting along Atlantic currents, buffeted by sea winds and scorched by the sun, connects the boats, the bodies, and the sea as symptoms complicit with one another. The boat is a fossil, an extension of the bodies fossilized by the weather, covered in salt and the sun. Of course, the weather is not just an amalgamation of sea, wind, sun, and salt. It is ripped into by the mechanic who took the money of these 50 men and ran, by the machete that hacked the line to the towing boat, by the man who jumped overboard as the boat left Praia. The weather is the scaling up and the trickling down of another set of forces that propels the boat away from Nouadhibou and along Atlantic currents. It cannot be separated from the turning away of the state, which forces men and women without prospects to board a ship like this, and through force and neglect, keeps these ships away from their destinations. The force of the weather is complicit with that of state power,
the willful averting of its culpable and complicit gaze, turning a blind eye to boats in distress, the unfettered access given to vigilante boats that troll northern Mediterranean shores, keeping migrant ships away, the willful disregard of recent and older histories that identify the origin of these exoduses in policies and military incursions made by the very countries that men and women in these boats are fleeing to. The force of the weather is permeated with all these threads that together corrode and get under the skin and into the hold of these bodies and this ship.
Yemaya is the goddess of the ocean. She looks over rivers and seas. She brings fish to the fishermen, and she protects mothers and children and boats at sea. She is the source of water, of rivers and seas. As the sea is where life began, so she is the source of everything. She is pacific, but when angered, her fury is terrible. She is worshipped in West Africa, but traveled across the ocean on slave ships to the Brazilian Candomblé as Yemanja and in Haiti as a moon goddess. She rules the surface of the ocean and complements Orisha Olukin, who represents the death of the ocean.
Bodies that confers life to the boat is a kind of futurist amalgamation of humans and machines gone retrograde, where here the machine carries the weight of dissolution and death. Both ship and bodies carry traces of life and death. The sea wind and salt water are the catalyst and medium that confers contiguity onto both, a suspension between life and death, an animism and horror that can only make sense through the operation of state power as a force inextricable from the weather. Franco Berardi describes how futurism as a movement was entranced with the machine as something outside of the laborer. The machine was in front of the body and changed laborers' behavior without changing their internal constitution. But now, he argues, the machine is inside of us, and it is inextricable from what he calls the biomachine of our social nervous system. In Marinetti's time, the machine stood in front of the laborer, paving the way to an industrial future. Yet the machine is not in front of us anymore, any longer. It is inside of us. Our souls are on the factory floor. We are sped up from the inside out at the pace of an accelerated capitalism. But what would change in this story if we considered illegalized migrants as such laborers and their journey on the drifting coffin ship on the Atlantic as one such machine? And what if we considered the compounding of ship and body as an extension of the idea that the machine is inside of us, that is produced by the combined forces of the state and the sea? This somehow inverts futurist notions of automatism. These bodies and the boat enter into one another via the weather and ocean currents. Their amalgamation through the medium of the weather becomes an indictment of the relationship between humans and machines.
5. Maniwanda lives on both sides of the Atlantic. She is a spirit that is powerful, enticing, and dangerous. She brings wealth and demands fidelity. Mamiwata is often depicted as a mermaid, and this image might have come with first contact with Europeans whose ships were adorned with mermaids on their prows. There were many water spirit traditions across Africa, and the crew traveling traders along the coast from Liberia to Cameroon might have spread and consolidated their beliefs.
Drift along the same route that bore slave ships from West Africa to Barbados centuries before forms another undercurrent of horror of this journey. One journey recapitulates the deaths meted out in another. The forces of the weather and the fact of the jettison of enslaved men and women by ship's captains, coupled with the laws that permitted them to do so, amplify the same desperate gestures of the men who died on board this ghost ship. Frantz Fanon pitches this conflict more acutely as petrification. To Fanon, petrification means to turn to stone, and this turning into stone is only measured when the settler turns into a decaying mass, into the earth, and into a rotting corpse. This reckoning is where another life can arise again. Here the native could be the migrant or the refugee, and the settler could be the colonizer or the arm of the state. And embedded within their material relations is a process of turning into stone, decaying into earth. A liminal but spaced space, inhabited by what Achille Mbembe would call the difference between two deaths: the living dead and the plain dead. On this ship, petrification can be read as the transformation of the bodies of these men by the salt, sea, and sun, their preservation and desiccation, but also as the boat coming into a life whose function is as a missive of death. Both ships and bodies hover between two deaths. This petrification is created both on and by the sea with the same Manichaean mechanics that end in death. But something specific happens in this petrification that transforms the migrant body not only in its encounter with the face of the settler, but also in their desiccation that somehow connects them to the corrosion of the coffin ship. And this nautical petrification, intertwined with the hovering of boats and bodies between the living and plain dead, makes for a retrograde automation, a chain of events that confer life onto a ship or machine, and death onto the men, its particular itinerant labor. In the film Kempinski, director Neil Galufa films four men in Mali's capital, Bamako, at night. Illuminated by neon lights on the street and sometimes holding a neon tube in their hands, these men parody stereotypes about West African notions of traditional knowledge. Each man describes a futuristic scenario of his own invention, but narrates it in the present tense. Thus we have presented before us a world where there is only one man left in a society of oxen he married into, a world of vehicles treated as people in a kind of sentient camaraderie, a world of telepathic intimacy and instantaneous travel. There is a devastating humor in the delivery of these stories, deadpan but also taunting, tongue-in-cheek. The stories, narrated in the present, dare the viewer to disbelieve them. You can see this in the faces of the storytellers. These forays into the technical possibilities of the future are cast into the quotidian of the present. who is invited to the man's wedding to his ox-wife? What kind of mundane objects are made present through light-speed travel? Which day-to-day vehicles do one watch and converse with? The power of this kind of animation lies in its capacity to confront and undermine stereotypes of African knowledges and techne. It inflates the stereotypes and at the same time inverts it. It's a furious, witty animism that can only follow petrification. What makes this inversion possible is a temporal shift of the narrative to tell stories of the future as if they are in the present. The issue of time, the future and the present becoming machine, forms the beginning of a vocabulary to build on the water. But how to think about the future in the context of the ghost ship? Can time be skewed to understand the petrification of these men's bodies on the sea, their slow death, the recapitulation of the ship's drift along the routes of the slave ships centuries ago? The present recapitulates the past, invoking the futurist idealization of the machine to make sense of the life and death of the bodies of the men on this boat.
They represent the power of the sea depth in the West African Yoruba tradition and amongst the Bini people. Across the Atlantic, they are associated with the dark powers and depth of the sea, complementing Yamaya, who is associated with light and life in the fertile ocean surfaces. Olokun's world is the world of what falls below, what thrives in the cold darkness of the ocean floor. She represents the unknown. She keeps secrets of the past, present, and future intact and undercover. For those who follow them in the Americas, Olokun's power in the dark depth is associated with ancestors who did not complete their journey across the Atlantic in slave ships.
We decided that afternoon to find our way to the shipwreck. Looking out to the sea off the Corniche in Dakar, you can see a small island, the Île de la Madeleine, nature preserve. In front of the island, etched in shadows, is a small yet hulking form, all angles and protrusions. It is a ship, the Almadraba Uno. For 4 years, the 61-meter-long trawler had been a fixture on the horizon. Run aground on the shore of the Île de la Madeleine, it sank below the waves in high tide and emerged with every low tide, on its side, covered in rust. To me, there was a thin and yet painful irony that a Spanish fishing boat could become such a fixture in the seascape of the Dakar coast and could leave such an intransigent mark to take this space when pirogues from Senegal, setting sail to Spain with a more imperiled and desperate cargo, left no such trace. Ships lost in the water, turned back, capsized, full of the dead. While this ship, in Senegalese waters, dredges the sea for fish, takes life from the sea with industrial trawls, and yet remains in its slow decay. It was as if the Spanish trawler had completely absorbed the other bodies, journeys, and histories inside of its hulking carcass. The public dismay that the wreck of the Spanish trawler met was environmental and not migrational, however. The ship's owner from Cadiz was fined for the damage to the seabed and for the danger of spilling its reserve of petrol into the water. The spill did not eventually happen, and the ship's carcass remains, a feature for those visiting the small rocky island to circle by as their pirogues approach the island's small quay so that they could swim at its beaches and look at the cormorants that perch on shore. But when we went to the quay, we found that the ship that I saw was not the trawler. It was another ship being used to dissect the Almadraba Unu, piece by piece, so that it could be taken back to the owner in Cadiz. The trawler could have been sunk into the waters completely to create an artificial reef, but it was cheaper for the ship's owner to destroy it and take the pieces home. The last part had been dismantled the day before our visit. In my quest to find traces of the shipwreck, I sat across from the military personnel in charge of the pirogues to the island three times. Each time I sat across the desk from him, the story of the ship that no longer existed became a loss that I could not explain. I watched the videos he took of the ship as it was dismantled, low-grain and shaky. For some reason, I wanted these images. The images of the rusty ship that no longer existed were somehow ghostly. After my third visit, I took one of the military-operated pirogues to see the ship that had dismantled the shipwreck. The boat ride was choppy, and though it was afternoon, the water was a midnight blue, the froth of the waves an unearthly white. As we approached the ship, I pulled out my phone and began to film. It was not really a ship, but a flat pallet, likely towed there by a larger ship. On it was cranes hoisted up high, the angles visible from the corniche. In the middle, there was what looked like a giant dumpster with generic metal chunks of the Almadraba Unu piling up over the rim. Our pirogue circled the pallet and reached the shore of the Ile de la Madeleine. A couple stepped off the pirogue and walked towards the beach a few meters away. The skipper asked, "Aren't you getting off?" I shook my head. The boat circled the broken metal pieces again, and I returned to shore.
Six. The names of Mami Wata. Maulisu. Yemonja Kwiti Kwiti. Mbose. Makanga. Bunsi. Kambisi. Moana. Madre de Agua. Yemanya. La Sirene. Madame Poisson. Mamba Muntu. Maman de l'eau. Maman de l'eau. Maman de l'eau. Mami Wata. Mama Dilo. Mam Water. Mama Joe. Maman de l'eau. Maman de l'eau. Watra mama. Mam Lambo. Nom Lambo. La baleine. River mama. River maiden. Lamante. Maman de l'eau. Maman de l'eau. Maman de l'eau. Mou Miri. Abanamen. Yemoja. Ndeb. Water mama. Watra mama. Maman de l'eau. Mama de l'eau. Maman de l'eau. Maman de l'eau. Maman de l'eau.
Thank you.